Good evening and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Nick Blumberg. The Chicago Bears look to break out the moving boxes after Springfield in action.
We had no time to look at the bill, read the bill, let alone go into caucus and talk about it at 3:30 in the morning.
After a last-minute stadium bill stalls in the General Assembly, the Bears Board of Directors votes to build a new stadium in Indiana.
We have a financial crisis, a public safety crisis, and a crisis of confidence in that the city is moving in the right direction and can never come back.
Illinois Comptroller Susana Mendoza launches her second bid for City Hall.
Behind every bullet, there's a mother, there's a father, there's a child, there's a grandparent, there's an entire family that's life that's destroyed forever.
Anti-violence advocates demand answers on a gunshot detection system for Chicago. Meantime, the acting U.S. Attorney General throws his support behind Chicago's embattled U.S. Attorney, Andrew Boutros, and the Obama Presidential Center hosts a preview ahead of a Juneteenth opening. And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Olivia Olander of the Chicago Tribune, Laura Washington, also of the Chicago Tribune and ABC 7 News, Shruti Singh of Bloomberg News, and our own Heather Sharon of WTTW News. Thank you all for being here. Let's get right to it. Lots to talk about. So, Laura, the Bears say they're taking their ball and they're going to Indiana. Do you think this is really a done deal, though?
Supposedly. Some people think this is just another stalling tactic. They're kind of vague. They say they're moving to Indiana, but then they want to continue the conversation with the legislature. And you either are or you aren't. And they had said earlier that they were going to make a decision by late spring, early June. Now, is this the decision or is the decision yet to come? I think there's a lot of questions still about that.
Yeah, Olivia, we heard House Speaker Chris Welch reacting to the news in a statement. He said, while Indiana is willing to raise taxes and promise $1 billion in taxpayer funds, Illinois has focused on the needs of working families who want relief at the gas pump, at the store, and on their insurance bills, not taxpayer-funded stadiums. Illinois remains open to ongoing efforts to secure the Bears in Illinois. However, it'll take time to get it right. I mean, there are these two sort of competing stadium incentive bills in Springfield. Do we have any sense of what lawmakers are doing, how they might proceed here in the General Assembly?
Yeah, well, we heard from some of the top lawmakers today who are in charge of the negotiations or leading negotiations on the Bears that they are still hearing from top Bears leadership in forward-looking conversations that they want to continue conversations with top lawmakers in Illinois. And to them, that says this is not over, even though they might have put out a statement on Twitter and, you know, to fans about this.
And for folks who weren't necessarily following along, there was a lot happening at the end of the legislative session. There was a very, very last-minute competing proposal. You know, we'd heard about this sort of payment in lieu of taxes idea. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about what the very last-minute idea was that came up.
Yeah, so payment in lieu of taxes, that idea was something that the Bears said could provide them with some certainty on their property taxes. That was something that passed several weeks ago. Then in the last couple hours of the legislative session in Springfield over the weekend, we saw another proposal that would have allowed Arlington Heights or Chicago to sort of negotiate with the Bears and potentially lead to a stadium essentially in either one of those places, but didn't get a vote in the House. So now we have these two different proposals and the Bears saying, you know, maybe we just want to focus elsewhere.
You know, Shruti, Indiana officials, of course, you know, celebrating this decision, saying, you know, come on over, welcome to our state. But, you know, do we have any idea of how close the Bears are to actually, you know, selecting a site or inking a deal? It feels like there's still a lot of questions in the air.
Yeah, I mean, they have talked about a site along Wolf Lake in Hammond, Indiana, but the Tribune has reported on some of the challenges that that particular site has. We don't know, but let's just talk a little bit about the timeline between Indiana and Illinois. I was actually taking a look at some of the past stories I've done, and I was going back and back and all the way to 2021 when they first purchased the site in Arlington Heights, and then there was the proposal in 2024 to build something along the lakefront, and then they said they were going to go back to Arlington Heights. When the deals were not coming along in the state legislature, then they said this past December, roughly, that they were going to go to Indiana. So there's been a lot of back and forth. And so right now, as you mentioned, that we don't know if this is the final deal, but given that there isn't, after years and years, there's no deal in Illinois, and Indiana passed legislation and the governor signed it within a matter of months.
Right.
So
sure.
The contrast is striking.
And,
you know?
And what you spell out and what you show is a lack of credibility. I mean, they've said so many different things. What can you believe? And it's difficult to negotiate with an institution when the ball keeps moving. maybe a lot of this conversation should have been had behind closed doors. They could have come up with a deal with the legislature behind closed doors so that they wouldn't look like they were vacillating so much.
There's also a question of what the Bears want and what the state of Illinois is willing to provide, right? The governor has repeatedly said that he does not want to put taxpayer dollars into building an actual stadium building. Right. He's okay with the public infrastructure around the building getting taxpayer dollars, but he's concerned about additional money from the state of Illinois going into what he's called, you know, a privately owned company that's worth billions of dollars. So I think that's, you know, the juxtaposition of the questions about taxpayer money as well as what the Bears want is, I think, where the issue is.
And Heather, we heard from Mayor Johnson's office. They said in a statement that over the last several years, the Bears have stated their intentions in multiple jurisdictions. So today's announcement is not surprising. Without a final site selection until we see shovels in the ground in Hammond, the city will continue to engage in discussions grounded in the interests of our residents. There's been some conversation in recent days about whether the mayor's sort of dogged focus on a Chicago stadium might have, you know, which we should say that the Bears have publicly ruled out, might have affected the deal in Springfield.
Well, I think it did. We heard from lawmakers that said, gosh, it's hard to approve such a politically perilous bill when you have the Bears saying maybe we're still talking to Chicago and maybe there's still a way that, like, we don't have to sort of bite this bullet. Maybe this is Chicago's problem, not our problem. And there's nothing lawmakers like more than saying, oh, are you gonna wear the jacket for this? Great, thanks, go right ahead. But the issue is that it is, you know, politically perilous for everybody involved to sort of even conceive of a lakefront stadium, considering that there's a little thing called the Lakefront Protection Ordinance, which prohibits the creation of any structure east of Lakeshore Drive, as George Lucas can well tell us, whose museum is opening pretty soon, not in Chicago, but Los Angeles, for exactly this reason. And the question remains, well, how is the city going to pay for it? Are there going to be billions of dollars in hotel tax revenues, as the mayor has called for, to go to this potential new stadium? What happens to the more than $500 million that city taxpayers, hotel taxpayers, still owe for the last renovation of Soldier Field in 2003? That makes this all very, very difficult and potentially a way for Indiana to capitalize on it and say, look, we're easy, we love you, we'll do whatever you want. Now, that's, I think, the other part of this is that for now, up until this point, it's been sort of speculative in Indiana. Now, Indiana residents, Indiana voters are actually going to sort of see maybe what the price tag for this Bears Stadium actually is going to be. $1 billion in new taxes is a hard lift at a time when gas is nearly $4.50, $5, and when groceries are really expensive. So I think that there are many, many different moving pieces.
And I think part of the conversation in the last few days has been about, well, let's let the Bears go to Indiana because Chicago and Illinois will still benefit because it's close enough,
right,
that there'll be economic development, there'll be jobs, there'll be all kinds of opportunities coming out of Indiana into Chicago. And our people, our Bears fans, they may go out there for the game, but are they going to hang out there, you know, for a weekend? No,
right.
They're going to come back downtown to Chicago. They're going to go to Chicago restaurants. So it's not a lose-lose for the Bears, for the city, even if the Bears go to Indiana.
And I was going to say, the Bears explicitly made that clear in their statement today, declaring Hammond to be part of a greater Chicagoland.
Right.
The stadium could somehow link Hammond with the Loop and the South Side and the Northwest suburbs.
I think you only hear that in car dealerships, Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana.
I don't know that that's going to fly, honestly.
But I mean, Heather and I have covered so many Chicago budgets, and we cannot not talk about the challenges that the city of Chicago has in terms of its long-term budget deficits and the structural deficits. And that's one of the reasons that when you talk about a huge project like this, the city can't necessarily put its weight behind financing something like that when it doesn't have the resources to do so. And so we can't ignore what is going on with the long term. It's not about this mayor or the last mayor, but it's a very long term budget structural deficit that the city faces.
Well, and jumping back to the point that you made about all the various sites that they've announced, you know, Olivia, that's one of the things we've heard from lawmakers, this real frustration, you know, that they've expressed, some of them quite publicly, with Bears management. I mean, how much of a complication is that?
Yes, absolutely. I spoke to State Senator Robert Peters today, who represents that lakefront area, and he said something like, I think this is like the 80th announcement that we've heard from the Bears. And he's someone who has expressed a lot of frustration publicly. He's also expressed a lot of pride in the lakefront area as, you know, an iconic place for the Bears to be. So this is a huge thing for Chicago lawmakers, as we were discussing earlier. This was a reason that the stadium deals in Springfield couldn't happen, as Chicago lawmakers did not want to incentivize leaving such an iconic location.
Yeah. Right. I think that was a shrewd move on the mayor's part to, you know, come last minute, but to come in and continue to make a case for Chicago, because so many of the Chicago lawmakers really do not want to see the Bears leave Chicago, even though the Bears are saying there's no way we're going to Chicago. So that gave him some leverage.
Yeah, and that last minute bill does, you know, hypothetically give Chicago the chance to create a stadium authority. But to Heather's point, where's the money going to come from? Where are they going to build?
Minor details, really, when you think about it.
Lawmakers are continuously saying, I mean, even during the Illinois budget process, we heard from leaders saying that nobody wants to lose the Bears. But at the same time, they're hearing from their caucus, and the caucus is hearing from constituents that we don't want to put more money in. So nobody wants to lose the Bears, but they're also nervous about putting more money in. So it's kind of a two-part deal here. That,
catch,
you know,
22.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's a very conflicting sort of sentiment people have, because there's this emotional tie that people have to their sports teams, but taxpayers are also thinking about my tax bill.
Right, particularly because you're talking about a billionaire owners of this team. Why, when we have taxpayers who are suffering, who can't even pay their taxes, particularly in low-income neighborhoods, why are we talking about giving any money to a billionaire?
Certainly those who have been negotiating this deal have brought that up, is that why should there be any sort of property tax concessions made for a private business when there are so many challenges that residents are facing in terms of the increases in their own property taxes. So that's been an argument that even those who are negotiating the deal have been bringing up as well along the way.
Well, and Heather, it's kind of funny talking about the emotional tie that Shruthi brings up. People were up in arms when we thought they were moving to Arlington Heights outside of the city limits. Yeah, now that's sort of like the option that people would be excited about.
Right, and it shows you just how much sort of the debate has changed over all of these various, you know, sort of thing. But let's be clear. The mayor saying let's build a new lakefront stadium went nowhere.
Right.
And Governor Pritzker was harshly critical about it just this week, saying, well, the mayor wanted, you know, billions of dollars for the Bears, and I refused to do that. I'm reminded of Alderman Jason Irvin's frequent quip on the floor of the city council: everyone wants to die. Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. This is a clear example of that.
All right. Well, the Bears are the big news of the day, but minor little thing. State lawmakers did manage to pass a budget in the wee hours of Monday morning. Olivia, what do folks need to know about this year's spending plan?
I mean, the main thing is that this is mostly a sort of maintenance budget. It's been described. There's not any increases in income or sales tax that folks will sort of notice in their day-to-day. There are, you know, a number of transfers between different funds, as always happens in how we balance the state budget. There's also going to be a new program coming out of the budget for folks who are kicked off of SNAP benefits due to work requirements. That's something that was put in place, expanded by the Trump administration last year. There will be direct payments to people who lose their benefits as a result of that. I think about $400. So that's one thing that's brand new in this budget. But overall, a lot of maintenance in this, I think, $56 billion budget.
Yeah, Shruthi, what stood out to you this year?
One of the things that really stood out is that the Pritzker administration was really, and state lawmakers in the legislature, were talking about affordability at the same time. You know, they're trying to pit that against what the federal government is doing. This is a Democrat-controlled state, and so clearly there are people who are very critical of President Trump. And so they were really trying to play off of that, is that this is an affordability issue. You know, they're giving the sales tax holiday for school supplies for a week in August. They are taking a temporary halt to the increase in the gas tax. At the same time, they did increase a few of the taxes that may impact businesses, like the social media platform, digital advertising, cryptocurrency, things like that. So I know that there has certainly been some noise made from those industries about these particular things. But you know, one of the things that always stands out to me is, like you were talking about, it was like all the way up to the end. You know, they really pushed that May 31st deadline.
Yeah, push right over the edge.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's worth mentioning that it, again, is a crazy way to pass a budget in Illinois, for to be debating this at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, with little sort of transparency about what is actually in that final version of the budget and what isn't, much less ample time for the residents of Illinois to sort of weigh in on it and sort of give their feedback to their lawmakers. But we in Illinois have accepted this as normal, and it will continue until somebody declares it otherwise.
But it can be politically dangerous, especially for the lawmakers.
Sure.
I think that's one reason why Chris Welch pulled back at the last minute on the Bears bill, because if you really don't know what you're voting on, if you don't really understand the nuances, and things have not been analyzed, and there's some missing logic there, it's going to come out.
Right.
And it's going to come out later this year. It's going to come out in the run-up to the November elections, and lawmakers are going to be having to pay for it when they get criticism for it.
Yeah, I think most conversations that folks have at 3 in the morning, even if they're sober as a judge, are not the most coherent.
Nothing good happens after 3 a.m.
Well, there was a piece of legislation that didn't move that would have put new restrictions on data centers, but Laura, in light of that inaction, Governor Pritzker announced he's pausing incentives for these new data centers. That's earned him a bit of pushback.
Yeah,
here.
Well, because there's a lot of support for data centers, particularly in communities where they feel like there's an economic need. And some people wondered whether or not the governor really has the right or the authority to be able to do that. So that, and it's kind of came out of nowhere. It's another late week surprise.
Yeah, it's been a week full of them. We mentioned the digital ad tax. Heather, Mayor Brandon Johnson was very excited about that, although the victory lap may have been a little bit premature.
It sure was. He told reporters that he was excited that it would help the city council sort of fill the projected $1.6 billion budget gap that it's looking at in 2027. Turns out that when the state budget actually made it all the way through, it preempted the city from imposing its own version of its digital ad tax, which meant that really the only thing that the mayor accomplished in Springfield this season was to kill that Bears bill. He asked for the right to impose a $1 fee on deliveries that don't include groceries or medicine. They rejected that. He asked for the ability to tax payrolls of large firms. That didn't even, I think, get really a serious hearing. Although I should say that he did band together with other mayors to convince lawmakers to restore sort of local government's share of the local income tax. And that is not a huge amount for Chicago. It's about $13 million. But when you're looking at such a big deficit, every little bit helps.
Well, and we were talking about the city's structural fiscal problems. Of course, the state facing some of their own. But there was some proposal earlier this year to take action on pensions. That didn't go anywhere this year.
Governor Pritzker has proposed a couple of times over the last few years to fully fund the pensions. Illinois and Chicago all have these very severely underfunded pensions. He has been trying to increase the amount that is going into the pension funds to fully fund them. Right now, there is a mandate to put them at about 90% funded by, you know, in a couple of decades. He wants to put it at 100% by 2048. He floated that proposal 2 years ago. Again, this year, it just hasn't gone anywhere.
Okay. Another bill didn't go anywhere, Olivia. Pilot testing of these driverless cars like Waymo's. But on the flip side, there was a measure allowing rideshare drivers, like with Uber and Lyft, to unionize. We've seen a lot of pushback from Uber and Lyft on this idea in previous sessions. Did it feel like the opposition was a little more muted this year?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Uber actually ended up supporting the agreement that went through. They did not oppose it. And, you know, that's because they were able to come to an agreement where these drivers are able to bargain. Another part of the agreement is that they are still considered independent contractors, which is, you know, sounds like a technical thing, but it does make a big difference on the rights that these workers have. But yeah, they're now on a path where they could organize themselves and essentially unionize and bargain collectively with Uber and Lyft, which is a really potentially huge pool of people who are now eligible to unionize.
Yeah, and there was a huge push from rideshare drivers organizing at the Capitol this year.
Yes, and
certainly.
I should say the governor still needs to sign the bill.
Absolutely. As with all of these, that is the way it goes, folks.
Yes.
One of the another big proposals from the governor was this sort of affordable housing slate of bills. Lots of pushback to the idea of zoning reform from local municipalities. But, you know, supporters are saying this isn't just affordable housing, it's also economic development.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't get people to live in a particular area, you're not going to be able to get any of that multiplier effect that you have, people spending money in the community. And it's it's interesting because a couple of years ago when the DNC was here, the Democratic National Convention, I spoke with so many mayors at that time, and housing and affordable housing was like the number one thing that every single mayor talked to me about. And that's certainly the case here in Illinois and in Chicago. And economic development and where people live are go hand in hand. Yeah. And jobs too, right? Where people live, where they play, and where they work, all is connected together.
Olivia, do we have any sense of whether any of those sort of build proposals from the governor might come back in the fall veto session or in the lame duck next year, or too soon to say?
I mean, a little soon to say. Certainly the governor, when asked directly about this, said he's still continuing to work on it. Certainly the advocates are too. But I mean, even as much as different cities want to see new housing being built, municipalities, some of them were at the forefront of the opposition of these types of proposals because they say it takes away some of their local control. So I think that's a contention that the governor and other supporters of this are going to continue to deal with. That part was certainly not resolved this legislative session.
It was a pretty significant victory for aldermanic prerogative.
I was going to say, writ large.
I never vote against aldermanic prerogative. Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of someone who may have to contend with aldermanic prerogative one day, Heather, there's a new contender for the mayor of Chicago. That is Illinois Comptroller Susana Mendoza. What were the key messages you heard as she launched her campaign?
Well, she declared that Chicago is in the midst of a blizzard of incompetence. And you really heard her sort of focus on that metaphor of a blizzard. It was interesting to hear her say that the city was in public safety crisis when we know that it was the lowest murder rate in 60 years last year. It's clear, though, that she is speaking to the people who might see that data but not necessarily feel any safer where they live. And, you know, she took it right to Mayor Johnson, saying that he has done a poor job leading the city over the past 3 years. And we also heard her sort of take aim at Alexi Janulius, who many people expect to run for mayor, even though he is also running for another term as Secretary of State. She, of course, ran in 2019, both for mayor and for reelection of comptroller, and sort of got caught in the midst of Rahm Emanuel announcing in a shocking way that he was not going to seek a third term. So this time around, she forego that reelection campaign. She's all in on Chicago's mayor's race. I have not sort of worked through my personal feelings about this meeting. The mayor's race is fully underway.
Yes, it absolutely is. And she's smart to get out of the box early because there's a lot of opportunity there. She had a statement today about the Bears and slammed the mayor about Chicago losing the Bears. So she's trying to use this to her advantage. She knows that Janulius and Mike Quigley, the congressman from the north side, another person who says he's running but who's also running for another office, that puts them in a difficult position so she could be out front. And she's been running for a while, actually, because she's about neighborhoods. She's been doing a lot of social media. So she's going to be a serious contender.
Well, and as you mentioned, these other candidates, it's likely to be a crowded field. Mendoza, of course, ran into trouble in 2019 with her connections to folks like convicted former alderman Ed Burke. She actually told us on the show a couple nights ago she thinks the average voter doesn't really care much about Ed Burke anymore. What's your take on that?
Well, I think you're going to see some campaign ads against her that are going to bring up Ed Burke and going to bring up the old Chicago machine and the connection she has. That's an argument that never really dies. But she's got a story to tell. She's got a lot of experience, both as comptroller, as city clerk. She was a state legislator, so she knows all the playing fields of Chicago in terms of politics. And I think she's going to play that up.
And given the sort of running more to the center, to the right of Mayor Johnson, there are other folks that are going to be in that lane as well, like Janulius, like Quigley. Do you think that's going to sort of complicate how this race plays out?
Absolutely. So I think that at least at this point, I'm thinking of the mayor's race as sort of two different primaries. And right now, Brandon Johnson, who has not said whether he's going to run for a second term, has the progressive lane to himself. And right now, that moderate centrist lane is very, very crowded. So it's almost as if there are going to be two primaries in that first round of voting. Who's going to be sort of the progressive candidate? Will Brandon Johnson have a challenger from the left? Who's going to emerge from that moderate lane? And will they have enough support to take on Brandon Johnson, who, as of right now, is the only black candidate to sort of be in the mix? Race is always an issue in Chicago, and it's not something any of us should not discount.
But yes. Let's not rule out Willie Wilson. This will be, what, his third time running for mayor. Each time he gets 9 to 10% of the vote, that's going to come directly out of Brandon Johnson's hide. So that's something I think he's got to be looking over his shoulder at.
Absolutely. Well, we never have to look over our shoulder with the four of you. You are all great, but we are out of time. So our thanks to Olivia Olander, Laura Washington, Shruthi Singh, and Heather Sharon. And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Tonight's presentation of Week in Review is made possible in part by Ann and Rich Carr, BNSF Railway, and Francine and Dr. Anthony Brown. Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
That's our show for this Friday night. For all of us here at the Week in Review, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay informed. Have a great weekend. All right, officials are lifting the curtain on the Obama Presidential Center. What did you all make from some of the preview images that we got? It's pretty impressive stuff.
Pretty spectacular rollout from a public relations standpoint. They did an excellent job of marketing. You can't turn around without hearing about the Obama Center, which is an important institution for Chicago.
Yeah, absolutely. Anybody got plans to go just yet?
I mean, I think the smart move would be to wait for the crowds to ease a
little.
It's
going to be months.
But I think it's interesting how it's almost inviting the community to the outside spaces as well to the inside spaces. So I think it might be worth even going to just sort of experience what it's like outside in that new branch library, in the new plaza. And, you know, I think that it's going to sort of remake that entire.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports educational initiatives in the legal profession.